Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember...
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis and sometimes even some insight into the news media issues of the week. And we invite you to stay tuned and listen to us and offer some of your own thoughts as well. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
I read your newspaper this morning cover to cover very early in the day, and I was very impressed.
Oh, thank you very much. It's kind of you. We'll talk about newspapers and whether they're going to survive and what they do in their communities in a little bit here. Speaking of newspapers, Ira Fussfeld is here, the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and affiliated publications.
Nice to see you. That's not what Alan said about the TU before you. I'm not sure he's playing for two different audiences here.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
No, he actually said how much he enjoys the paper, particularly when his name is in it.
Yeah, that's right. Which is rare, right?
Which is never.
And momentarily, we'll be joined at the microphone by Judy Patrick, the vice president of the New York Press Association. Meanwhile, I said we would talk about local newspapers. Let me just give you a little top line on research from the Nieman Lab, which is at Harvard University. Harvard doesn't have a journalism program per se, but they have the Nieman Foundation, where there's a lot of research and where people actually have a fellowship for a year. A couple of researchers there had an interesting piece which shows that despite the economic hardships that local newspapers have endured, they remain the most significant providers of journalism in their communities. While newspapers, these researchers found, accounted for roughly 25% of the local media outlets in their sample, they accounted for nearly 50% of the original news stories in their database. Local newspapers produced more of the local reporting in their communities than television, radio, and online-only outlets combined.
Well, you know, those of us who are inclined to favor newspapers are not surprised by this statistic. Anecdotally, you can see it virtually every day of the week. So the only negative thing that crosses my mind about this is that we all know that newspapers are not covering nearly as much as they used to, and they're increasingly covering less because of the manpower shortage. So if newspapers are going to continue to be, or are continuing to be, the primary source of news and original reporting, and there's going to be less of it, where is the public going to learn about what's going on in the world?
Yeah, that's true. And I, even though, you know, I run a great public radio station, I have to say, I am not surprised by the results of this study. I think it's extraordinary what I learn every day from reading the Times Union or the Berkshire Edge, which is an online publication over in Great Barrington. You learn a great deal, and it's a great pity if you think about the deterioration of the number of newspapers there are.
You know, there was a discussion broadly about this subject on the Roundtable program the other day, and some of the mail came in. I was reading the letters from the readers, from the listeners, and there were more than a few that said, well, the reason newspapers are not as strong and they're not selling as many as they used to is because of the bias in the newspapers. And that troubled me on a lot of levels, but in particular, when you talk about community journalism, the fact that there are fewer reporters because there are fewer people buying the newspapers and thus there's less revenue. If you think about the content that's in a local newspaper as strictly political and in the framework of whether it's biased one side or the other, you're missing the point of so much of the other journalism that a local newspaper provides. Everything from Little League scores to wedding and engagement announcements and on and on and on. Theater reviews, restaurant reviews, that has nothing to do with the bias of the political climate. It has everything to do about reporting on what's going on in your community, and there
is less of it. Ira, I couldn't agree with you more. It is not a matter of bias. Now, you know, the New York POST used to be a biased newspaper. I think it's getting less so, believe it or not, these days. Maybe not in their editorial columns. Nevertheless, I do think it's all a matter of money. It's money. In the end, it costs a lot of money. You got to buy all that newsprint, right? And you have all of those people working for you. And in the end, that's a lot of money.
Well, traditionally, 3/4 of the revenue that supported newspapers came from advertising. And of course, now right. We know that as digital is replacing print, and as mail order is replacing brick and mortar stores, that revenue source has dried up. And so you look to, well, since can newspapers support themselves with digital advertising online? You would think, well, that would be fine. Everybody sure. has their website. Well, it doesn't work that way. 90% of the new digital advertising is going to two places only, Google and Facebook. Right. And more than 60% of all the ad dollars in the world go to those two sources.
Okay, so as a newsman, Rex, as somebody who runs a paper, knows the economics of the paper, what's the fix on that? Do you bust them up? Do you do what you did with AT&T and some of these other places? Or is it just the fact of the time?
It could be that you do multiple things. Some newspaper executives were up on Capitol Hill last week, part of sort of a fight against the big tech companies. What they want is legislation that would allow newspapers to work together to get a better share of digital ad dollars. Right now, newspapers can't collaborate in bargaining with, say, Facebook and Google for a bigger share of those ad dollars.
Because the
restraint of trade, it's considered a violation of the antitrust statutes.
So what they want is what has been done for baseball. Now, Ira, you're the sports guy. Baseball has been excused from that antitrust stuff. Isn't that right?
Well, yeah, that's the only major industry that is, and I believe. And I just find that the concept of the publishers going up to Capitol Hill to be something that makes my skin crawl, because I don't want to go and ask for favors. I don't want to ask for special treatment, but it has come to that. That all said, I'm unclear as to why Google is able to use our content and reward us so minusculely, if that's a word.
I mean, so how would you fix that, Ira?
I would fix it by figuring out a way legally to say, if you want to use our stuff, we're happy to have you use it. Here's what it costs. And if you don't pay what it costs, we'll take it off of your site.
Yeah, but that's the problem. They're going to tell you, what, Kingston Freeman? No.
Well, the smaller papers have no leverage.
Yeah, and you can't band together unless.
Yes.
Judy, could the New York Press Association, on behalf of everybody, fight Google?
You know, it's an idea, but it seems like we in the media have gotten so used to just taking whatever scraps they throw our way that we're happy to take the pennies on the page view, that anything that they'll throw us. And I think we've kind of gotten used to it. Oh, that's just the way it is. Oh, we rank low in their algorithm. That's just the way it is. I think we do have to stand up for ourselves and find a way to get these things changed, because advertising is not going to save the day for us, especially in this world. We might as well give up that fight unless something dramatic changes.
Okay, so as a political scientist, this is interesting. I try to project, well, I think it's interesting anyway. You guys might not.
We'll tell you. Yeah, we'll be the judge of that.
We'll be the judge of that. I like to project myself into a congressman's head when, in other words, when...
Are you announcing you're running for office? Is that what that is?
When the newspaper guys come up to the Hill and you have the Podunk Journal is the only newspaper in one of your major towns, do you want to do anything they ask you to do? Or are you going to say, I don't want to take on Google or Facebook?
I think they can work their way around the Podunk Journal. I mean, I think the days of the newspaper having such clout in a congressional district are pretty limited. I think the world has changed enough that they'll suck up to Google before they will a local newspaper.
Frankly. What's in it for them?
Campaign contributions.
Yeah, Google's a very big lobbyist, one of the top lobbyists in Washington, along with Facebook. I mean, this is all, the tech giants are giants, and the newspaper industry isn't the giant that it once was.
That said, Alan, when you said what are the things to do, I think that there is another front in this, which is being done by the attorneys general in 50 states and D.C., who have signed onto an antitrust investigation into Google. And separately, New York's Attorney General Tish James has a similar investigation into Facebook, whether Facebook has reduced the quality of consumers' choices or increased the price of advertising. So,
well, I'll bet you anything that the Times Union is going to be supporting Tish James for re-election.
Well, that's why I'm sure she would just really crave that endorsement, which we didn't give her the first time she ran.
But, you know, all of that said, and let's just say for the sake of discussion that there is a success on the part of the newspaper industry in getting the Google and Facebooks of the world to give us more money for our content, it's still unlikely to be enough to be a game changer. It'll help, it'll cushion, and it certainly won't be a big game changer for the small newspapers because they have less content and less clicks that appeal to Google. So we're still in the midst of the quagmire for the industry as a whole, and I'm not sure how we get out of it.
And it gets complicated, too. Think about this. Most of your newspapers are private enterprises. Rex has said that to me any number of times. I say, how much do you make? He says, listen, this is a private company. We don't have to tell you that.
And most of them are small, family-owned businesses that have been in the same family for generations. Let's not forget about that.
That's right.
And one other piece to the revenue puzzle is that, as Rex pointed out, historically newspapers got about 75% of their revenue from advertising, classified and retail advertising,
right.
25% from circulation. Well, as the revenue has dried up from the advertising side, more reliance is on the circulation revenue. And A, we're selling fewer newspapers, so there's less circulation revenue. And B, at the same time that we're cutting content because of the fewer reporters to save money, we are increasing the cost of the newspaper to consumers. So somebody's going into the newsstand now and spending a dollar on a daily newspaper, whereas they used to spend 50 cents or a quarter, and there's less content in those newspapers.
Well, you know, that is so interesting, Ira, and it is a profound point, and I hope that nobody thinks this is a self-serving thing, but I've switched over from a pay newspaper to this Edge in Great Barrington, and it's free. It's online.
Yeah, it's probably worth about that, too, with all due respect.
No.
You know, by comparison to a local newspaper with all the staff, and if you're not paying for a newspaper, shame on you, because you're not supporting local journalism in your community.
With all due respect to you, Rex, and nobody, and nobody has more respect for you than I do, I want you to know that I'm just reporting a fact.
Uh-huh.
I have a relative who called me the other day and said, I never read the other paper because I don't want to pay for it. Now, you said, just right now, you said, shame on them. And mm-hmm. I get that. I understand that. It's shame on them because that is what is leading to the diminution of the product and of all of these newspapers. But it is a fact. It is not a prescription on my part.
Right. Well, that's like people who you always denounce who listen to WAMC and don't give you money. So
I would, Rex, in all honesty, because I have such respect for you, I would never denounce them. I love all of our listeners.
What? Don't you say during fund drives, if you're not paying, do your share? Isn't that part of the fund drive appeal?
No, what I do say is you should do your share. I don't say a pox on you if you don't do your share. And that seems to be what you're trying to imply here. And it's not true because I would never do that because it would just turn people off.
Yeah, you think this guy's
the product.
Been, let's take a vote. You think Alan's been around politicians too many years and he's parsing this?
I think he's trying to justify his behavior.
I want to just add one other thing so listeners won't misunderstand or get the wrong idea. I picked up, for example, my paper, my former newspaper, have not worked there for 5.5 years. I know how it suffered with decreasing staff. And I marveled at the fact that as I turned the first 5 or 6 pages, how much local content there was. Now, mm-hmm. there wasn't as much as there used to be, but it's still a must read, in my opinion, if you live in my community, because there's lots of stuff in there.
And still an incredible bargain, Alan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A dollar.
Yeah. So if it's a must read, Ira, I take it that they're getting more and more subscribers, right?
No, absolutely not. And therein lies the rub. And why do you suppose that is? Because people are getting it for free elsewhere, or perhaps they're waiting for a weekly newspaper and feel that that's enough content for them.
According to Rex, they are not getting it for free. That's the whole point.
Well, you're getting some of it for free, even when
they
are paywalls.
They're not paying for it.
Well, no, I'm saying they're not getting it for free. Rex runs a huge newspaper with a huge staff and pays for all of that stuff, and they go out and they find all of this material. Alternatives don't do that, and people don't get it, but they don't want to pay. Am I wrong about that?
And some of it is, of course, picked up and presented free by aggregators, so people can get the information that we produce, even if it's not on our website, which is why we're having this conversation about Google and about Facebook.
Well, forget about them. What about the other aggregators? We have a wonderful...
Aggregators. Watch those gators. We're going to drain the swamp and get those gators.
In other words, I am finding, because every morning I open up, for example, Empire Paid, the Empire Report, and I will click on things. I pay for my subscription to the Times Union, so the Times Union I can get. But if I go directly from them, I can't get it. I got to go to the Times Union. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I see what you mean. Yeah. Because we do have, now that we've put a paywall around most of our content for most readers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the aggravators or aggregators or alligators are somewhat stopped in their tracks because, you know, one gets frustrated after a while.
And this is the solution. You're asking what's the solution to the demise of the loss of those ad dollars. I think it's probably a two-step process. One is what's happening right now. We are trying to get more revenue from users digitally. But I kind of think that the long-term solution might be a membership model like public radio has, and that newspapers will eventually turn themselves into not-for-profits, which is another step that Washington needs to take. There needs to be a facilitation. There needs to be legislation that makes it easier and more financially viable for for-profit entities to become not-for-profits so that they can sustain newspapers.
Well, I'm fascinated. It's really interesting.
We have to give up the illusion, the dumb illusion, that if we put our copy up online for free, that somehow these magic Google dollars are going to roll into our coffers and we're going to be able to hire more reporters, because it's just never going to happen. I think Google's never going to give us enough money to make a sustainable news product.
Well, I have great respect for you, Judy. But I'm fascinated by what Rex just said, because he may be right. That may be the look of the future. But the Hearst Corporation, of course, would have to turn itself into a not-for-profit.
No, not the corporation, just the newspaper division.
Well,
the corporation makes a lot of money from
things. I get it. I'm so sorry. But if, in fact, we're going to make these into not-for-profits, it's going to mean a whole change in the way in which we talk about newspaper business, right?
It would. Yes, it would be very different, and maybe that's what's going to happen. In the meantime, what has to happen is newspapers have to become more, can we say, user-centric. We need to pay more attention to what we now have increasingly, which is good data showing us what the users of our information really need. We need to not just be editors who fly by the seat of the pants and say, gosh, that looks like a good story to me, I'm going to put that on the front page. But we need to shape our content to match what is really necessary.
Well, wait a second. A little problem here, and that is, with great respect to you, of course, Rex, if people are, I don't know how to say this, but if some people who read newspapers are dumb, and they get a thrill out of a story about an alligator that ate a dog, and that becomes what they want as opposed to what you think may be good for them, isn't that a problem?
But we've always done that. We've always given people comics and crosswords and sensational stories alongside the serious. And so I think there's room for all of that. Not that our whole focus needs to be on just that stuff. And increasingly, more sophisticated metrics that you can get online show you not just clicks. You're not just going for traffic. You're going for engagement. We track how much time users spend on each story, and each story can get an engagement score, therefore, because if you have a good investigative piece, people will spend 3 minutes or so, which is a lot of time, actually, reading, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. But with all due respect to you, and I have
how many times has he said that?
If you repeat a lie often enough, you know.
A lot of Donald Trump going on here.
Well, that is the whole point. Think of how this guy, Donald Trump, became president of the United States. He gave a bunch of people stuff that he knew they wanted, even though many people were holding their heads and saying, this is terrible that people want that stuff. Now, Rex said not that long ago, just a few seconds ago, that we have to start thinking about what they want as opposed to what we want.
That's not what he said.
He's been around politicians too long, I tell you.
Why don't you clarify what you did say, because I have nothing to
respect. I'm just saying that the news experience needs to be relevant to the individuals who are consuming it.
And, my point.
Yeah. And so that means that we give people important news that they need as well as fun stuff that they crave. You know, this is an old axiom, but it is news is not just spinach, but it's also ice cream. And so I think we can balance all of that and give people a great product digitally and find a way to survive, but we have to just be more scientific about it, including use of not just our brains, but there's technology, algorithms, machine learning, automation. All of that can really actually help us figure out what kind of content is most valuable for our users.
Well, you know, in my town of Great Barrington, 7,000 people, 5 pot shops have been licensed. All you New Yorkers are coming over, you know, getting online over here in Massachusetts, doing it. There also is a plan right now to build a fairly substantial pot growing operation with fields in Housatonic, which is part of Great Barrington, Mass. And I got to tell you, this is the number one issue on everybody's mind because people are being told that the stink is going to be so great. By the way, they do stink, and the kids will be upset with it and all the rest of it. So there, you don't need an algorithm for that.
Well, let me ask you a question. Since you raised it, how much coverage, if at all, does the Berkshire Eagle or the Berkshire Edge or the WAMC or stations that cover that market give to pot? And the reason I ask the question
is
that's covered as daily news? And
absolutely.
Okay, because I know that the Denver Post, when they were the first, Colorado was the first state to legalize pot, if I were remembering correctly, they notably hired a pot editor.
A critic, just like a wine writer.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, speaking of the greatest job in journalism, Texas Monthly this week has just hired the nation's first taco editor. Is that not a great job, taco editor?
Is that a full-time position?
It is, yeah. This is the same publication who 4 or 5 years ago hired the first barbecue critic.
Well, that's got to be a very weighty position.
Yes.
You know, I can remember in my days as an editor, when I looked at the metrics, any story dealing with marijuana was always one of our top performers. It just got an amazing number of page views. And
absolutely.
I don't know why.
You know why.
There are a lot more interesting stories that I thought we had written that would have gotten far more traction than they did.
Well, all this pot coverage in the newspapers might sell more newspapers, but then people might smoke the newspaper after they finish.
They won't remember what they read, right? Absolutely. Does that stuff smell as bad when it's burning? I don't know.
People want pot. People want pot. Judy, that's what it's all about. They wanted it. They've been repressed from it for a long time. Now, all of a sudden, they have a chance to get it. They want to read about it. They want to engage with it.
And so you can't ignore that. I mean, I don't think that a reputable news organization would ignore that issue. Even if they didn't have any metrics, they'd be able to tell about that. Anyway, it's just a significant challenge to move from, which I think we're going to be doing in the near term, is move from a newsroom that kind of makes its own judgments based upon the historical understanding of what is news to being one that pays more attention to what consumers tell you they really need to know. And some of it, I think, is a lot of the community news that small local newspapers have been paying attention to all along.
I've known you for a long time, Rex, and I wouldn't put yourself down that way. I think your intuition, and I think that's what you and Ira and Judy always did, your intuition is pretty good about what people want.
Well, thank you. But let's move to a topic here that we need to get to before, because we're less than 5 minutes left on this wonderful program.
Oh, no.
By the way, if you're a listener and you have some thoughts on this, media@wamc.org is our email address, media@wamc.org. This is an article from Columbia Journalism Review that I am reading that has to do with a push to not name mass shooters. We've talked about that in this program before, but it is a very interesting notion that if we were to not give people the names of those who are the perpetrators of mass shootings, if we were to withhold that information in the media, would that be the right thing for us to do journalistically in the interest of retarding the number of mass shootings?
Well, the argument in favor is compelling in that they have any number of instances where these mass shooters have said that they did it in part for the notoriety and to get the celebrity of being in the newspapers and on TV. But I must say, as a journalist for 45 years, my instinct is something like this happens. It's our responsibility as a reporter of what's going on in our world to provide as much information as we can. And the name of the perpetrator, as the cops would say, is significant.
Well, think about all the times on this show over the years, and it's a lot of times we have talked about when not to name people. We don't want to name somebody who's been raped. I get that. Believe me, I get it. we don't want to name often the people who do it. So there's a huge number of times we have talked about the fact that we put somebody's name in the paper and it just encourages more. It's a tough road.
But getting in their name in the paper isn't the only notoriety they're after. They're after, I think people will know who they are. They want the movie made after them. They want Steven Spielberg to drop in and do a story on them. And us not publishing the name repeatedly isn't going to stop that from happening. There are other aspects of notoriety, and it doesn't just deal with naming someone. And I agree with you not to put them on the front page, to give them too much attention.
Yeah. No, but you know, I think you're right. Judy has a good point here that this is, it seems to me, just an easy route that is attack the media rather than really dealing with the more significant issues that could reduce mass shooting. Mm-hmm. Of course, reduce the number of guns available for mass shooting, restrict the ability of people to get their hands on them. Now, we know that there are copycat attacks. After the Parkland shooting, there was one study that found that threats of similar violence in schools increased by 300% in the 30 days after the shooting. But I don't think that's because the shooter was named. The name of the shooter, I can't recall at this point, of course. Even there's been so many of them that I don't think we remember the names in any case. So it seems to me that it's a solution that looks from the outside more appealing than its effect really would be.
Well, I mean, can you imagine if, God forbid, in one of our communities there is a mass shooting in a neighborhood, your neighbor is the shooter, and we know it, and everybody in the community knows, but we're sorry, why didn't you print his name? Well, we didn't think it was a good idea.
Yeah.
If you have this information, it has to be out there.
There would be hell to pay. You're right.
Well, at that, we're going to be out of time.
We are.
You know?
Well, I think we should aggregate this show. because it aggravates
me. Just aggravate. Yeah, I think we're just going to aggravate our listeners in any case. As I mentioned, you can share your thoughts, media@wamc.org. Our producer, David Gustina, has come in. Thank you, David, for being here and for doing all the preparation here, which means that he's here to escort others to the next studio. Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, Alan Shartok, I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. Thanks for joining us this week on The Media Project.
They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.